There's a basic and seemingly obvious question missing from the tech startup cycle. Should this exist? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. When it comes to tech, companies and investors and entrepreneurs mostly talk about what it can do instead of what it should do. Like, should health and wellness apps funnel detailed personal information about their users directly to Facebook without people knowing or giving permission? The Wall Street Journal reported that on Friday, and it's only the most recent example of tech companies doing something that makes you think, didn't anyone ever ask if this might be a bad idea? Katarina Fake is the co-founder of Flickr, a venture capitalist, and host of the new podcast, Should This Exist? She told me investors are starting to ask those questions slowly.
You know, I definitely think we're in the minority. You know, I do think that one of the things that we're hoping to achieve with this podcast is that this become part of the general conversation.
How are these entrepreneurs and the people that you're talking to and the CEOs, how are they responding to these questions? Is there any defensiveness or surprise?
I don't think that the entrepreneurs who are coming onto the show are resisting in any way. I actually think this conversation is being welcomed. And we've had pretty much every single entrepreneur who's joined us so far on the show has said, oh, that is such a good question. I am so glad I'm having the opportunity to think about things this way. I haven't been asked these questions.
Do you think it's kind of a problem that they've never been asked these questions before?
Yes, I do. And I really think it's a question that we should not only be asking ourselves as technologists and as people that are building it, but ourselves as consumers. Is this something, you know, is this a platform that I really want to participate in? Is this a tool that I want to introduce into my home?
I mean, at some point, where will that tension, where will it start to land? How far are you willing to go, let's say, as a funder, as a venture capitalist? If somebody brought you CRISPR, let's say, or Facebook.
Right.
And you were able to do that scenario planning. Are you really going to say, you know, no thanks to this return?
I had this conversation recently with another investor, which I thought was very significant. He had an opportunity to invest in Juul, you know, the e-cigarettes. And it was pitched to him as a smoking cessation product, right? Of course, obfuscating, frankly, how much nicotine was in it. And it has created millions and millions of new smokers, mostly teenagers. And he turned it down. And he said, I'd never put a price on my ethics before. But I now know that if I had put in money at that time, it would now be worth about $25 to $30 million. And it's nice to know how much your ethics are worth.
Do you think that as you continue to ask these questions, that you might find that you're able to make a business case for better decisions from the investor perspective? Like short term, you might make $30 million on Juul, but they might be regulated out of existence. Or do you think there are just always going to be investors who say, no, the return matters more?
I do think you can make an argument for both sides. I mean, the kind of I never underestimate the greed of humankind, right?
Yeah.
But I do also believe that the best thing that could happen is that consumers be empowered to make decisions about those things. You know, I recently talked about this as if they're like the Bond villain on a Swiss mountaintop doing their evil deeds. But what you want in that case is for the villagers to rise up with their pitchforks. We're seeing this happening all over. We're seeing this happen even in the case of employees at different companies, like the recent Google walkout, you know, is a really great example. Employees that are working at the companies are now saying, this is not right. This decision made by management goes against the values of the people that work within the company. And I think it's spreading. And I think that this is becoming a stronger force in business as well.
Katarina Fake is the co-founder of Flickr, a partner at Yes VC, and host of the new podcast, Should This Exist? And now for some related links. Axios had a good piece yesterday about genetic testing and privacy. It reminded us that Family Tree DNA, a popular home DNA testing service, shared customer data with the FBI to help solve violent crimes, but didn't tell its users. Even though Family Tree DNA has actually marketed itself as a privacy-minded company that doesn't sell user information to third parties. And here's the kind of paranoia that this whole trustpocalypse is starting to cause. I noticed in reading the Axios piece and one of the Wall Street Journal stories about apps sharing data with Facebook that the fitness app Lose It was one of the apps that was sending specific information to Facebook, like how much people weigh, when they lost or gained weight, what they were eating, when they manually entered how many calories they thought they burned having sex. All of it. And Lose It was also mentioned in the Axios story about how it integrates genetic testing information into its weight loss product. So I immediately emailed Lose It because, of course, I immediately wondered if, by the transitive properties of super sloppy and constant information oversharing, Facebook now also has the genetic information of some poor people who thought they were just trying to lose weight. Now, Lose It wrote back almost immediately and said it was not possible that any genetic information was shared with Facebook, which, great. But you can see the rabbit hole of fear that gets created here that is indeed long-term bad for business. Oh, and if you, like me, did your DNA test back in more innocent times, Consumer Reports has an article from late last month on how to delete it, or at least how to try. I'd love to hear what you think about genetic testing and oversharing. Our email address is mptech@marketplace.org. And speaking of what you think, thank you to everyone who emailed us about whether they use mobile payments or want to. Dawn said she does use mobile payment when she can, but a lot of times, even if a retailer says they take certain kinds of payments, usually PayPal or Android Pay, it doesn't actually work. So her wallet still has to come along for backup. And Mike said, very on point for today, that after listening to all the things that are possible with mobile payment apps, like tracking everything you buy and sending you coupons and all that business, he said, quote, "My fear is that it will catch on and will eventually become the only way to pay for anything." Fair point, Mike. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. Patrick in Santa Cruz, California, wrote to us to say Marketplace is an essential element in his life and that we're helping make him smarter through high-quality, thought-provoking, and informative journalism. To join Patrick in supporting what we do, please donate online today at marketplace.org. Thanks to Patrick and all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.